Well, we've got the Ouija board poll up there at coasttocoastam.com under the highlight reel. Go up there and vote. The question is, can you contact spirits of the dead with a Ouija board? And we give you a couple questions here. Yes, at times spirits can come through. No, it's the subconscious mind. And then another area, only demonic or negative entities. So go ahead and vote at coasttocoastam.com. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Bob Murch with us, Brandon Hodge. Bob, let's go back with you and Brandon as well and pick up at what point then did the folds get involved in this?
Well, you know, after all of these different devices that Brandon was talking about happen, we have something that happens in 1886, just a little bit before, 4 years before Ouija is born.
Okay.
And that's the birth of the talking board. So all of a sudden in Ohio, as Brandon had mentioned, the Associated Press gets a hold of this story that says the new planchette, the talking board, is greatly agitating Ohio. And what happens is this whole community, Akron, Ohio, a bunch of towns, they all start playing with them like mad. And we don't know where they're coming from. Hopefully Brandon will be able to get back to going over kind of the near misses that happen. But they start popping up. And they're exactly like a Ouija board. In fact, we can see drawings of the little table on top of a board that has letters and numbers and even the dimensions.
Uh-huh. And we don't have radio then. We don't have television. So people need something to occupy their time, don't they?
Exactly. And right after the Civil War, you know, 1886, there's just everyone is affected by this massive death in America. So it is weighing on the minds of the Americans' consciousness. So We're stuck in this kind of mode where everything is happening. I mean, you have, you know, Abraham Lincoln's wife trying to talk to ghosts in the White House. This is just common. It's not good or bad. It's just a fact of what's happening in America at the time.
Millions of people subscribe to this belief. I mean, it's a compatible belief with Christian doctrine. That doesn't mean that all the Christians accepted it, but you know, you could attend a seance on a Friday night and still go to your Episcopal church on Sunday morning. It wasn't incompatible.
Yeah, you're not going to be damned to hell or anything like that.
Not then, anyway.
Right. And so what's interesting in 1886 is this talking board leaks out of the spiritualist movement. It's not just happening in these camps. It's not just happening in this religion. It's regular people. So this town, all of a sudden, the regular folks are taking it. And it's the first time the talking board leaks into that. And in fact, we're really lucky. A couple of years ago, with the help of another collector, stumbled on these articles that show a company in Massachusetts, the W.S. Reed Toy Company, actually made what they called a witch board. And they sent it to President Grover Cleveland for his wedding. And President Grover Cleveland writes back that he received it at the White House. So we now know there was a witch board or a talking board in 1886 that was mass manufactured, or we're hoping it is. We know there was one. Then Ouija doesn't happen until 1890. But what we do have is a man named Charles Kennard. And Charles Kennard is in Chestertown reading the paper, we think. And he reads this story in 1886.
And he's fascinated by it.
Exactly. Now, he believes he invents it. He goes on to tell the world through his entire life he had invented it. It's hard to say that he did when we know these articles from 1886.
And it so closely conforms to the illustrations in those articles,
sure,
which, as Bob has tracked down, and we've been to Chestertown together and actually been within the Kennard house where he lived when he claimed to have invented the Ouija board. But we know that his local daily newspaper reprinted this article.
Well, might he have been the first mass marketer of it?
Well, the first mass marketer would have been the Kennard Novelty Company. So Charles Kennard...
His company.
Right, exactly. The company is named after him. So.
Yeah.
When he's in Chestertown, he works with a man named E.C. Reich, who's next door. He's a cabinet maker. He's a coffin maker. And he makes instruments. And he, according to Charles Kennard, asked him to make him a dozen of these boards. These boards, you know, are used. They get pretty popular. And then Charles Kennard moves in 1890 to Baltimore, where he meets a man named Elijah Bond. And Elijah Bond is very key to this story because Elijah Bond is fascinated by this device. He cleans it up, and he decides he'll put a patent on it.
Ah.
But what's interesting is right now, Ouija doesn't have a name, so it's still just a talking board or a witch board. And this is very new to the history that I found a bunch of letters to the editor of the Baltimore Sun, where in 1919, fast forward to 1919, all the original founders start fighting in the news, kind of like a Facebook fight.
Okay.
I did this. No, you did
this.
You
did this, sure.
You know, everyone's making themselves more important. But Charles Kennard gives an interesting account that one day they're sitting in about April of 1890, and they're sitting in Elijah Bond's boarding house, and they sit down and ask the board what it wants to be called. And it spells out O-U-I-J-A. And when they ask it what it means, the board spells out good luck. Now, immediately, a woman who was there, took us a lot of time to figure out who she was named Helen Peters. She was Elijah Bond's sister-in-law. And she pulls out this locket, and she says, look at this. And inside is this image of a woman, and on top is written O-U-I-J-A. Now, that's really interesting because the word didn't exist.
That's weird.
Until then. And Brandon, tell them, what do we think? Why would she have been wearing a locket that had a word in it that wasn't invented?
Right. It's kind of curious. So our prevailing theory, and this is just a theory, is that there is an English novelist, a very famous English novelist anyway of her day, that goes by the name, her nom de plume, if you will, was Ouida, and that's O-U-I-D-A. And any listeners can freely Google that and find her on Wikipedia. Her actual name was Mary Louise Rame. But again, Ouida was her nom de plume. We are not sure why, but she sort of had a cult of personality that had grown up around her.
Okay.
She was, again, very popular. And she was popular, particularly among female readers. And she, it's funny, too, she also mentions lockets quite a bit in her writing. But the locket that's described, that Bob's talking about in his story, is has a picture of a woman's face and supposedly the name Ouija in it. But anyone who looks up Ouida, and again on her Wikipedia page, can see her signature. And if you look at her signature there, it's O-U-I-D-A with a sweeping loop that kind of comes under the whole word and loops under. And it could be interpreted as a J, perhaps. And so our prevailing theory is that she you know, was a fan of the novelist Ouida. She had a locket with a woman's picture in it, and it had a replication of Ouida's signature. And if there are any listeners out there that have antique stores or a piece of their grandmother's jewelry that matches that description, we would love to see it and help confirm that theory.
Okay, so eventually Fold has got to jump into the picture here, right?
He does. So what happens is, really quickly, what happens with any big business? So Charles Kennard starts this business with Elijah Bond. He brings in some other associates. William Fold is one of those people.
Ah.
He is one of the original stockholders. And as this business grows, I mean, from 1890, they start in their respective offices of a lawyer and running a fertilizer business, and they start making these boards, but they take off instantly. And the name has something to do with it. And the fact that America is hitting this, you know, huge explosion in manufacturing. So talking boards that were once made at home are now all of a sudden people want to buy things. Oh, it's better if you buy it than if you make it yourself. So it takes off. And within 2 years, this Kennard Novelty Company goes from having one plant in Baltimore to having two in Baltimore, two in Chicago, two in New York, and one in London.
Manufacturing Ouija boards.
Just manufacturing Ouija boards. And they are everywhere. So this comes from, you don't hear anything about it, to it dominating the newspapers. If you do searches like Brandon and I do, it's a numbers game. We like to see how many times these things are mentioned. So we can just in one way see how popular it was. It goes from, you know, nothing. You know, 1889, there's not really mention of anything going on, to boom, just a constant. So So what happens in these businesses? Well, Charles Kennard leaves and decides, I can do better elsewhere. He leaves the talking board business, tries to come up with another talking board, but he can't because there's a patent. And the company owns the patent now, not him. For the rest of Charles Kennard's life, he tries to get back into this business, right up until the day he dies in 1925. And in fact, you know, in 1919, we know a lot of what happened because of his letters claiming to have invented it, claiming to have done all these other things. So as he leaves, Elijah Bond goes to London to explore this patent, and he thinks it's a huge success here, it's a huge success in Canada. I'm going to go to London and run the London office, and I'm going to just be, you know, hugely successful.
Right.
He borrows a lot of money, and he's a really bad business person, and he loses everything. And he hypothecates all of his stock. So he's gone now, too. That leaves a big hole. And Colonel Washington Bowie, Bowie, it also related to the people with the Bowie knife, sure, which is exciting for Brandon because he's in Texas.
That's right.
And
Boston,
so,
right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Right. And I'm in Boston, by the way, so huge shout out.
By the way, yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a big night.
Really appreciate it.
And I spent some of my time in St. Louis. So.
Oh my gosh. So, well, I'm sorry for them, but I'm really happy for us.
Yeah. I am too, believe me.
And so William Fold steps up from kind of being a supervisor to taking over the business, and he's very good friends with this Colonel Washington Bowie.
He's in the right place at the right time.
Right place at the right time, really believed in this, worked really hard, and he comes up with his own patent, which is an improvement. And he kind of incorporates lots of other things that are going on, like magnetism. He puts a magnetized wire inside the planchette, which leads back to animal magnetism and all these different ways that he believes might make this board work better. And as the founders fall off one by one, and the Ouija board kind of falls a little bit, right? Like, it's so huge. So in 1892, you've got all these factories. By 1893 to 1894, you're back down to one in Baltimore. And he brings in his brother. In 1897, he brings in his brother Isaac. And everybody out there knows, don't go to business with your siblings.
It's just, with your friends or your family, right, Bob?
That's right. It's just bad business. And for a while, they did well until 1901. And in 1901, huge feud breaks out. And William and Isaac get into a fight over we don't know what, but Isaac is removed from the business.
It's got to be over money or something.
Or a woman, George, yeah. Money or women.
It's usually those
could
two
be.
Things.
That's right.
They claim that Isaac had done things later, but it's all after the fact. In fact, there's this real big hole. And I've interviewed and am friends with both sides of the Fold family, which are now just one side. And this feud went on until 1997. And what was really cool and interesting when you do this research is because I'm able and the time frame is just about right, the grandchildren of these people, and some of them knew the people we're researching, are still alive, and they knew them. So you can actually go and find these people, and I've done that with each one of them, and the Fold family was my first, and they're just a great bunch of people, all in the Maryland area. And so, you know, I do this website, and first thing happens, the granddaughter of William Fold writes in. And I'm thinking, yeah, right, like, I'm the Pope. You're really the granddaughter of William Fold. Well, it turns out she was. 2 weeks later, the grandson of Isaac Fold writes in. And I'm thinking, this is fantastic, except the feud's still going on. These two sides of the family who live literally one town away have not spoken to each other since 1901. And Bob,
if I could interject, not just haven't spoken, are disallowed from speaking, you know, on pain of punishment.
Yeah, you know, they grew up believing that one side slighted the other side of the family, and then, you know, feuds are an awful thing that we as people do. We pass them on. So when I interview people in the family, no one knows why they fought.
All right, now let's jump ahead a little bit. So this board has stayed strong for years. Mm-hmm. It has outlasted just about anything I can think of. And in an era now with, you know, video games and everything else, this Ouija board still stays strong. How come?
Well, you know, again, William Fold, being a master marketer, realized that keeping the mystery behind it was just perfect. You know, his boxes had this cover of a blue mystic ghost, you know, hiding its face. And so it has managed to become found by every generation. So the fun thing is the Ouija board turns 125 in 2015, and yet every generation finds it and thinks they're the first ones to play with it. And one, I think it's because it's so basic. And it's also, like Brandon was talking about, such an interesting feeling. I have been on hundreds of ghost hunts with some of the kind of the best EVP specialists, the Constantinos. I've had been able to do great work with the ghost hunters and ghost adventurers. Just fascinating stuff. But something's different when you play the Ouija board. Because, you know, like if we three sat down, Brandon might be a disbeliever. You might believe it's really happening, and I might be in the middle.
Yeah.
But when we start and we put our hands on that planchette, it gets very quiet. And when it starts to move, everyone immediately looks at each other. Are you pushing it? Are you doing
it? Does it always really move?
No. You know, it doesn't always.
Not always. No.
It tends to move more the more people you have, which lends to this idea of
somebody's moving.
Right, someone, well, I mean, you have to move it, right? Like, the Ouija board doesn't work without you. And so, again, I'd like to keep coming back to that. Whatever communication is happening, it's from you. So,
right.
You know, there are people who claim potentially there's some telekinesis that's going on.
Is it like a subconscious reflex movement?
Well, ideomotor response is the fact that your hands don't want to stay still. We're not meant as humans, and our muscles do not want to stay.
They want to move.
One place. They
right,
want to move.
Right.
And when you add that subconscious to it, that it wants to answer the questions, we don't like the unknown. We make up all kinds of beliefs to get through the day. So when you ask a question to a Ouija board, and you know this thing is supposed to answer, your body wants to respond. So, you know, spiritualists or people who believe in the other side would say, you're putting yourself in a place that allows your mind to open itself to make contact. And a scientist would say, you're almost right. You're putting yourself in a place to make contact with yourself.
Right, right.
The Ouija board itself, in your opinion, let's start with you first, Merch. What do you think is happening?
Well, it depends. You know, I've had the chance to do extensive stuff with Chip Coffey, who's a medium. So with him, I see something totally different than I would see with Brandon and I. You know, I was not convinced at the Tilly House. It was amazing. I mean, this went on for like 2 hours, right, Brandon?
Yeah, about 2 hours or so. It was a very long session.
It was a very long session. I wasn't convinced at all that it was a spirit. I was convinced that somehow we had done something. Something was happening, no doubt. But I think there are some people who are in way more touch with their subconscious than others. Like, just like you can't hypnotize everybody. I think some people are very prone to letting their subconscious take over, and then there's very tight anal people who just, they're always in control. They cannot let go. And there are people who are open to making contact with the other side. And if that's possible, why couldn't it be a Ouija board? And in fact, why shouldn't it be if that's what we think is going to happen? And, you know, again, with Ouija, we put so much power onto the board. We give it so much that if it's possible to do it, why not? And again, wouldn't if a spirit, if you were talking to a spirit, you know, from 100 years ago, it knows how to work a Ouija board because it was around when it was.
It was around. Is it a dangerous thing, Brandon?
I don't think it's a dangerous thing. I don't believe that. I believe it's only as dangerous as the danger you bring to it. It's only as negative as the negativity you bring to it. To go back to the Tilly House experience again, we had a very, I wouldn't say a positive experience. It was a very awesome and incredible, awe-inspiring experience, but certainly not a negative one. We sort of heard a neutral story, and that went on for about 2 hours. And we had a couple of gals that were on that hunt with us who were freaking out about the fact that there was a Ouija board in the room. Well,
Let's pick that up when we come right back. Welcome back. Bob Merch with us and Brandon Hodge, of course. But for both of you, as you look at the Ouija board and what is happening, can you explain how this contact with the perception of the other side occurs? Which one of you wants that?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, kind of where we left off. You know, I was talking about our experiences at the Tilley House, mm-hmm. where we had had a very positive two-hour session. And when we were done with that session, there was another couple of young ladies there that were kind of freaking out during the whole process. You know, sort of the heebie-jeebies, the, you know, very squeamish about the fact that there was even a Ouija board in the room, much less the fact that it was working. And so, you know, at some point they get talked into doing it, and they get on it, and they start just getting these awful communications. Now, keep in mind that we just spent the last 2 hours, as far as the communications were concerned, talking to a nurse that passed away in 1868 who attended to soldiers during the Civil War, and they just start getting these very, very vulgar messages, very aggressive, accusatory messages. I think the word slut might have come along at some point.
Jeez.
And they freak out, and you know, they swear all the shadows are moving, and that, oh my God, the chair behind me just moved. And I thought it was a curious observation that the rational people in the room were able to achieve, you know, a very concise, interesting communication over the course of 2 hours, yet those who came to the board predisposed toward fear and predisposed toward a negative reaction got exactly what they brought to it. And I think that's an interesting observation, and Bob can certainly build on that.
Yeah, you know, so one of the questions I think what you're getting to is, like, and you asked a little bit before, is, you know, is the Ouija board dangerous? So, I told you that the world at large did not believe that there was, you know, the possibility of demonic possession was not high on their list of playing the Ouija board. But there were times that were pretty scary. You know, you have, like, December of 1919 in El Cerrito, California, where you have a girl, Jenny Morrow, is run over, hit and run, she dies, and her family is just can't get over that someone would do this. And so they start using a Ouija board to find out who was the hit-and-run driver. And all of a sudden, neighbors are getting involved, and more people are coming, and all of a sudden they're having 24-hour seances. People are not sleeping in days. All of a sudden, the family members are not letting neighbors leave because they believe if they leave, they'll break the contact. Eventually, the police had to get involved, and a few people were put in the asylum. The town tried to unsuccessfully ban Ouija boards. So, I mean, you have these things that happen. You know, you have quite a few murders that are attributed to the Ouija board that people use to say the Ouija board told me to kill somebody.
Right.
And
that doesn't hold up in court.
Yeah, well,
no.
Here's something funny. So, you're great. A great case. Kansas City, 1935. We have the case of Nellie Hurd and her husband, Herbert. Herbert was 77 years old. And his wife, Nellie, was using the Ouija board, and it told her that 77-year-old Herbert was carrying on this illicit affair with a neighbor's wife, and that he had buried $10,000-$15,000 in the backyard somewhere. And she lived this lifestyle. She'd been married to him many years. She knew this couldn't be true, but again, perception. She started to believe what this board was telling her was the truth, and what her husband was telling her was not. So she decides, he's lying to me. She can't live with this anymore, that her husband's with someone else, even though he's not. And she sneaks into him at night. She bangs him over the head with the butt of a gun, knocks him out, ties him up, burns him with a poker, whips him with knots and with his rope, and says, tell me the truth. Tell me this is happening. And, you know, he can't tell her the truth because it's not true. You know, eventually, like anyone who gets tortured, this goes on for years. He eventually makes up a story. Well, she finds out the story isn't true because the money's not where it's supposed to be. He can't take it. He finally gets away. He takes that gun, and he shoots her 3 times, kills her.
Oh, my God.
So now she's a spirit, right? You know, she's on the other
she's
side.
She's joined the other side.
She has joined the other side. He gets arrested, and the police actually, after they can prove everything that's happened, they actually drop the charges because they consider it self-defense.
Because of the abuse.
Because of the abuse, right. That he just was trying to stop this, because he had burns and bruises all over his body. So there are these things that happen. Again, as you know, the press always picks up on the sensational things. So if the Ouija board causes someone to shoot their wife, that makes front page news. The Ouija board tells you where your ring is that you lost, not so much.
Not so much. We're going to bring in Karen Dahlman for a moment here. Awesome. The Spirits of Ouija, her latest book. And this is a person, as you know, Merch and Brandon, she's so excited about the Ouija boards. I've never seen anybody so excited about these things. Hi, Karen. Welcome back.
Hey, George. Thank you for having me. Happy Halloween, gentlemen.
You too. You're on with your friends here. So, Karen, let's talk. Let's bring you in for a few minutes here because, you know, Bob and Brandon, they, like you, are very staunch proponents of this Ouija board. So are you.
That's correct. And these gentlemen have done an excellent job in their research on the planchette, the automatic writer, as well as the Ouija board and talking boards. So you're speaking to the two best, number one. Yeah, and the history is very fascinating, as you're hearing, how it changed hands and how it transformed and the Ouija board that we have today and how it got to where it is. And it's true. It's a popular icon in our culture that we just can't seem to get rid of. And for me, it's been a part of my life for 40 years. So, yeah, I find the value in the Ouija board, absolutely, and I find the history very exciting and enriching.
Karen, did you ever have a bad experience with the board?
I haven't. I've had some experience where it's kind of mischievous, sometimes maybe a little negative. I can relate to the story that Brandon was talking about with the two girls in the room who just were freaked out, and I've seen that happen before. And I've had, in the beginning years of doing the board, where a spirit might come on or an entity and might cuss and be a little rude and obnoxious, and at that point, I'm not going to communicate with that entity. But I agree with these gentlemen very much so. It's with your intention and what you bring to the board and your energy about yourself. It's the energy that you hold within yourself. And as I think Robert said so eloquently, is that that's how life is. You go into a situation, and you're going to get out of it what you expect, and also how you show up and come to the table. So that's where you get a lot of the negative and misconceptions about Ouija. And it's a neutral device, as these gentlemen have been telling you as well, and so is the planchette. But Ouija gets the bad rap for all the different reasons. All the different reasons they've been explaining.
Yeah.
What are you dressing up for Halloween, Karen?
What would you think? What would you guess?
A large Ouija board.
A planchette.
No. Yeah, a see-through planchette. Be careful.
That's right.
Oh, wait, goodness, that's right. And I have seen a picture of the see-through planchette. It's very unique. I've never seen one of those before in real life.
It's a work of art.
All right, Karen, thanks for popping in. But go ahead.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before you go, do you have a question for Bob or Brandon?
I do, but I have to say something that I don't think Robert has told you. Awesome that the Red Sox won, but his great uncle Ricky Hall played for the Red Sox.
Ah, no, he did not tell us that.
So I had to share that. Sorry, Robert, I had to share that little information. I think it's phenomenal.
Full disclosure, Merch.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I'm a fascinating person. I have all kinds of secrets. They come out one by one.
Well, that's part of the Ouija board. No, I do have a question, George, for these gentlemen, and specifically geared towards Robert, if I may ask.
Sure.
Okay. Robert, I want to know, have you ever tried, or anybody that you know have ever tried, to make contact with the founders of the board via a Ouija board?
Okay, so yes, I'll tell you this. You know, I know for a fact that the Ouija board works really well for Kathy Fold, the granddaughter of William Fold. It's like in her blood. It always works when she does it. So we always joke around doing it, but we have tracked down the building where the Ouija board was named, where that seance happened. And I'm working with the Baltimore Historical Society and the city to make that a historic landmark. And if that happens, I would love to host a seance there, 125 years to the month that it actually happened, where we do try to contact all of them.
It'd be great.
I love it. Okay, thanks, Karen. Appreciate it. She's going to be on a future Beyond Belief television show with us on the Ouija boards, but I mean, you three are the only three I have ever found who just, you're not scared of this thing.
No.
No, I'm more scared. People scare me.
Right.
You know, like, it's all behavior. I'm fascinated by the effect it has on people. You know, everyone's talked about it. When I first started setting it up, would set up these boards, and when I was finally allowed to bring them to these paranormal conferences, which is ironic because ghost hunters were the original Ouija board proponents, You know, this was in their bag of tricks when they were trying to talk to ghosts in the 1890s, 1920s. Suddenly it's bad. And you watch people walk in. Brandon and I, it's a funny thing. So we were sharing a table, and we had Ouija boards, talking boards, and other devices.
Yeah, spirit trumpets got a lot of interest. Yeah.
And as people would walk by, they'd see and move immediately as far away from the table as they could to go through, and then they'd come over to a spirit trumpet or a planchette and go, "Ooh, what's this?" But not want to be anywhere near the boards. And
yeah.
So you asked how perception impacts immediately. I mean, you can feel that. You know, I don't think you need to be a psychic to feel that kind of energy. It's just like, wow, someone's really – fear is very powerful.
I am getting some fast blasts from people who think that the Ouija board is evil. How do you convince them otherwise, or do you?
Well, you know, I would say you always have to come back to logic. You should always think in your head. So this spirit communication – happens whether the board exists or not. People still talk to it, whether it's EVP, K2 meters, automatic planchettes, any of these things people were doing before. An argument we often hear is that the reason the Ouija board is evil is because you're picking up the phone and you don't know who you're calling. You're opening up a doorway. Would you leave your front door unlocked? Now, what's really interesting about that is that warning was originally given by mediums whose business was being cut into because Ouija boards were sold for $1.50 versus paying for them to come to your house. To them, it was like, oh, you need someone to walk you through this world. You can't do this by yourself. This is dangerous. But hire me and I'll walk you through it. You know, we hear that today.
But it is difficult to turn somebody around.
Yeah, well, I think it's difficult to turn someone around, but I would say they should come to our public pages on Facebook. Brandon and I both have them, and we're often educating people with photographs and history and stories of these things. And I have found in time, if they come to our lectures and they listen to us talk, and again, I give a whole history, multimedia history, clips of movies. You can see how people used to think about it. And if you run into someone who's older than 70, they'll tell you how great the Ouija board is.
Right, right.
They grew up in a time when everyone played this.
It was a parlor game.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was a game, but it was a fun thing. It was
right.
It was their entertainment at the time.
Exactly. Right. And, you know, my grandmother passed away, and I show up at the funeral, and my license plate is OUIJA, which, by the way, is perfect in Massachusetts because the slogan is, the spirit of America. So my license plate says Ouija, the spirit of America.
And you've never had a bad luck, no accidents, nothing?
No, you know, look, again, 500 Ouija boards, multiply that times a couple times, the doorway to hell has never opened up in my house.
Yeah, your entire shirt collection consists of variations of Ouija board prints, Bob.
Then I would conclude, Bob, that you must be the devil.
I'm not doing a good job.
Just on a very basic level, like Bob said, you have to have an appeal to logic. So when we're faced with this, and I get it too, even though I'm the planchette guy, I'm with the collaboration that Bob and have, I often have to field these Ouija questions. And, you know, when I get these sort of raving accusations of, oh my God, it's evil, I just pose a very simple question. I know that Bob does the same, and that is, what is evil about it? And you get, well, you're opening the doors, you can't close, and all this. You say, no, what is evil about the item?
In some cases,
it's a cardboard glow-in-the-dark toy purchased at Toys R Us. Even an older wooden one is a veneered board with stenciled letters and numbers on it. What is inherently, you know, and so that often stumps people because they are so quick to rail against the item itself that it carries something with it, but often can't explain what is so inherently evil. You know, if I pick up a dinner tray and scribble the alphabet on it, have I suddenly created a portal to hell?
I don't think so. But can you blame people for being so uptight about it?
I don't. I mean, I understand that.
I mean, I wouldn't want to sit next to you on a plane and you pull out a Ouija board.
Oh, man. I carry them on. I never tell anybody, though. I'm very careful about that.
Yeah, I will tell you, I was on a plane with Jeff Belanger, and we had to carry these Ouija boards back from the and we couldn't fit them, or it put our weight over or something. So we're holding them. And let me tell you something. We so wanted to pull one out And as we finally got up there and the seatbelt went off, and just be like, can you hear me now?
Right.
You know, like, we were immediately, the airport or the stewardess was looking at us like, if you do this, you are out of here.
Right.
You
know? Don't do it. Don't do it.
We're going to shut you down pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, it's not unheard of that people would be scared. I mean, everyone's afraid of the unknown. Everyone's afraid of trying something new or being potentially not in control. And Ouija board sessions are all about letting control.
Well, let me ask you both this. Do you believe in life after death?
Oh, I want to. I just haven't. I've been doing this for 20 years, and I've always been interested in ghosts and spirits. I have had some weird experiences.
But you're not sure, are you?
No. And I think that's why we still play the Ouija board. You asked why it's still so popular. Because people just want that experience. They want to see if it's there. You know, they want to believe. And, you know, again, for $19.95, you get an unlimited calling plan to the other side.
You sure do. That's a cheap phone call, huh?
It is. Yeah. No roaming. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I would say, for myself, very similar. I mean, I believe that the soul persists. But I usually, defer to the higher authorities in that. I try not to let it take away too much of my life. I'll worry about that when I'm dead, I guess. And Bob, if I beat you there, give me a call.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Why don't both of you give out your own respective websites, if you would, Brandon?
Absolutely. My website is mysteriousplanchette.com, all one word. There's also links to my Mysterious Planchette blog, and I have a very prolific public Facebook page, which anyone can find. It's Brandon Hodge, and you can look for Brandon Hodge, mysteriousplanchette.com in the title next to it. Love to have anyone.
All right, Bob?
Sure. If you want to learn more about me and see what I'm doing, you can go to robertmurch.com. That's M-U-R-C-H. If you want to learn about the history of the Ouija board, you can go to williamfold.com, and that's William, F-U-L-D.com. And I invite you to please come visit and like my Facebook page, Robert Murch-Public Page. Every day there's a new piece of history or something interesting to learn about the Ouija board to get people talking. And if you want to hit me up on Twitter, it's Talking Boards, same as Instagram.
Okay, we're going to come back. Final hour, phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.